We're going to hear from three different members of the Joint Use Planning Committee who have, that's why we don't have that stuff in here, who have taken part in the process. And I don't know what particular order it is. Who wants to go first? Does the town want to go first? You can. We're going to hear from the town of Searsport. We'll then hear from a member of the conservation community. Who is that going to be? Mr. Dickinson. And a member of the transportation community who is also on the Joint Use Planning Commission committee, and that would be Mr. Grinrod of the Maine Montreal Atlantic Rail Service. So, without further ado, would someone from the town come up? And I think if you just press that button, the light will come on. I hope there it goes. Thank you. Welcome, sir.
Good morning. I'm James Gilway. I'm the town manager for the town of Searsport. I've also had the fortunate pleasure of residing in the town of Searsport for the past 23 years and also being able to make my living there as the town manager and before that the police chief. Like everyone in the state of Maine, the residents of the town of Searsport have been patiently waiting for some decisions to be made on the future of Sears Island for many decades. Unlike many in the state, we have the pleasure of being able to see the island every day. We felt the pinch in our wallets when the island was taken off the tax roll several years ago. We have endured numerous protests and complaints and are still very patient and optimistic about the future of Sears Island. Over the past several years, our citizens are starting to see some progress in the future of Sears Island. Our processes, starting with the town's SIOC group, and then the SIPI, and more recently the JUPC, have shown to everyone that we can all work together. Every meeting throughout the process has been held in the open, and everyone who wanted to speak were given the opportunity to do so. This has helped to ease an unsettling feeling amongst our taxpayers, and that feeling's been there since the beginning. Our Board of Selectmen are very supportive of this end result. We have paved the way for the town to work with many different, as yet unnamed, groups who may come forward to manage the conservation side of the island and its possible buildings. We look forward to these relationships. Our board clearly accepts and welcomes the Maine Heritage Trust, Maine Coast Heritage Trust, as a partner to oversee the conservation of the island. During the process, we did address the issue of potential revenue for the town. There is a possibility of seeing payments in lieu of taxes on any buildings that might be built, whether they're nonprofit or not. There's clearly a secondary tourism dollar that will enter the area as a result of the enhancement to the conserved portion of the island. We should see anywhere from 3 to 10 plus jobs directly created by the easement, depending on what type of activities come forward for the conservation side. Our region needs as many jobs as we can muster, whether it's 1 or 100. We are intrigued at the potential for the education opportunities of the conservation portion of the island, and we are confident that there are people looking forward to exploring these. This resolution paves the way for the future intermodal transportation projects of the remaining portion of Sears Island when the needs are shown. The resolution has created a new attitude and has hushed some of the naysayers who insist that nothing will happen on Sears Island. And in closing, I just wanted to add, I also had the pleasure of riding out here today with...
Where's she at?
Sarah Bradford, the chair of the Stockton Springs Select Board, and a great conversation about how positive this is for both communities and for the region. And I wanted to express that, that she she let us know that on the way out. So,
thank you, Mr. Gilway. I'd ask you if you would stay at the podium. And what I'm going to do is I give the members of the committee an opportunity to ask questions of each rather than have the three presentations and then bring them back and forth. And so may I start it off by, you used the phrase at some point in your presentation there was an unsettling feeling. I think within the, you used it in the context of some of the people within your town of Searsport. And I guess I ask, was that, in your estimation, was that unsettling feeling because people really didn't know what was going to happen? I mean, at the very beginning, I know that there were talks about nuclear power plants and LNG facilities and every other kind of imaginable thing. Once that those rumors were allayed, did that unsettling feeling settle?
Well, I think the unsettling feeling that I refer to is the fact that nothing has happened. We seem to be at a standstill for many, many years. It's the coffee shop factor.
Yep.
When you walk in, when I would walk in as a police chief or now as a town manager, I would always be inundated with the question, what are you doing? What's happening? Now that I've been in the process and involved with the JUPC, it's just exacerbated. Everyone comes and says, what's happening? I wish something would happen. And they're seeing that we're making some progress through this. And even the coffee shop reports that are they're much briefer than you're going to get today say, look, we have a group of people, they're very diverse, and they're meeting the challenge, and they're coming to an agreement. And that's very positive. From the folks that I speak to, my neighbors, they're very happy to see something moving forward.
Thank you, sir. You mentioned also in your remarks three groups, and I think you referred to them as SEAC, SIPI, and the JUPC. Those were all, give us a little bit of a background of what those were.
Starting with the SEAC group, Sears Island Alternative Use Committee, was a town-born committee. It was asked that the town put it together by, I believe, the governor, and the town chose people, they had volunteers come forward and chose people to actually look at what can happen on Sears Island beyond the deadlock, the standstill. That was our first group. I believe they met for 2 years. Diane Smith was the chair of that group. That evolved, and it finished its task and had a series of acceptable performance items, things that could go on the island. That moved into the SIPI,
yep.
Sears Island Planning Initiative. Excellent. And through that process, it was defined even closer. And all but, I believe, one of the objectives or one of the acceptable items was met by that process through an independent process that took place. And that turned eventually into what we had over the past year and a half of the JUPC, Joint Use Planning Committee.
Mm-hmm. And the culmination of that committee's work is the report that's before us today.
Yes.
Any other questions of Mr. Gilway? Representative Hogan.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Gilway, first of all, if your coffee shops are anything like my coffee shops, everything is solved.
Yes.
You had mentioned at some point, and it might have slipped by me, about jobs created. I believe, right?
Yes.
And how many did you give us?
Well, this was the result of basically Diane and myself kind of counting numbers. We feel that one of the things that will be provided for Sears Island that's not there now is some level of management of the land. There's currently a gate. The gate is painted with all types of hand spray paint saying no parking, and someone changed it to no barking, and I recently took a walk on the island, and there's no management there. There's a TV on the trail. I mean, I don't know why someone would carry it, you know, a mile and a half onto the island and dump it, but it wasn't there before. There's the need to have some level of management on the island, and we foresee that that's potentially going to be maybe as many as three people. They may not be posted there, but somewhere along the line, somebody's got to take that that control. And it might just be the addition of responsibility to another job, but we feel that likely there will be three.
Okay. Thank you.
Someone else had a question? Representative Thomas and then Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gilway, if I read this document correctly, the town of Searsport will receive a payment annually of 7% of the value of this, at least the educational facility. Is that correct?
It's in the document as a recommendation.
Okay. 7% would equal a mill rate of 70, and that's a lot higher than any of the property taxes that I know of anywhere in the state of Maine. And I'm wondering, are we plowing some new ground here? I mean, I can think of lots of towns that have lots of nonprofit real estate that receive nothing in taxes. And I'm wondering if that precedent holds, if that would be a major hurdle to get over in developing any port facility on that island, if that were to transfer to the other property that were to be constructed.
Searsport has more than its fair share of nonprofit properties, and one in particular is the Penobscot Marine Museum, and I believe our number was partially born from that. They do pay us a revenue in lieu of taxes, and I believe that's where that number may have came from. There may be someone that knows more, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. And Representative, I think probably the 7 is referring to 7 mills, or am I wrong on that?
I think in the report it says 7%.
Perhaps it was misstated.
But it may have been.
I'm just reading from the report. I'm just trying to find it, and I should have underlined it. I didn't.
Good point. We more or less have a precedent set in Searsport where the Penobscot Marine Museum already pays in lieu of taxes. So we kind of already have a number in place. So.
One of the towns that I represent, and this is why it troubles me so much, one of the towns that I represent has state property that is equal to more than all of the rest of the real estate in town, and they get a pittance. $1,000 or $2,000 a year. And I'm thinking of all the towns in the state of Maine. I think of the very valuable coastal property that the town of Searsport has, that, and the towns in my area have tree growth, and they have open spaces that we have to give tax breaks from. And I just it's another advantage that towns, high-value towns have, and it troubles me. And then I look at it as a hindrance because I'd like to see a port on that island someday. And if we've got this type of trail breaking, if you will, going on, then I see that as another hindrance, and it troubles me.
Thank you, Representative Brown.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. Gilway, for coming. I'm very interested in hearing that the citizens support this. Now, you've stated they support a cargo port and probably the railroad extension. To me, that's a very important group that I want to make sure are going to support any port development. So I think that that's a real important key, is the fact that are they going to, when the time comes that we're going to talk about licensing a port, are they going to be, if there are distractors, are they going to be on our side and realizing that we have to see the plans first. But I'm hoping that if we're going to have a cargo port development there, and a railroad line extension that will have the support of the local people. I think that's very key.
Thank you. Any other? Senator Diamond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Mr. Gilway.
Good morning.
I'm curious, from your point of view and the town's point of view, what would happen if this agreement is not confirmed today? What are the consequences?
For about an hour and 15 minutes, we talked about that from Searsport to Augusta. And it's interesting. We don't have a solution. The LD 277 kind of clearly says that you're going to, you know, approve or deal with the future of Sears Island for transportation. I don't know where we go. It's really in the DOT's hands at that point, I believe, to kind of reformulate what will happen. This today's meeting will be important to us.
Would you see any danger of it just unraveling and dissolving, as it were?
Well, I see a lot of our, as I spoke to our naysayers who lived in town for many, many, many years, maybe even grew up there, who have seen nothing happen, just getting another plug-in saying, look, it didn't work. And a process like this is long and hard, and a lot of people put a lot of effort into it with all good intention. And it'll give some strength to those that want to shoot us down all the time.
Thank you, Mr. Gilroy.
Other questions? If we could, then I'd like to move on to the next. Thank you again.
Thank you,
Mr. Gilroy. Is there a preference between Mr. Dickinson and Mr. Grinrod? Who would like to go first? Then, Mr. Dickinson, would you come up, please?
The thickness of the pile of papers I brought up here has little to do with the brevity of the report I'm going to make. I would really like to focus most of my time with you answering your questions to the extent that I can. I'm Scott Dickerson. I'm the Executive Director of Coastal Mountains Land Trust. We're a land conservation organization that conserves working farms and forests, wildlife habitat, scenic vistas, access to water, access to trails, and natural lands throughout the western side of Penobscot Bay. I participated in this process from the beginning of what has been acronymed now as SIPI, the Sears Island Protection, Sears Island Planning Initiative. And I want to just take a moment to emphasize the character of that particular process. This was a group of more than 40 representatives of industry, of transportation interests, of town officials, state agencies, just general community groups, conservation organizations, a very broad array of people who have had a long interest in Sears Island from around the state and locally. We spent about 18 months in a very intensive analysis of documents, information, thoroughly evaluated all the options from conservation through development of a port. It was not casual, and it was not always fun. They were the intense negotiations, intense disagreements at times. It was not always a pretty process. But it did come to a consensus agreement, amazingly enough, in many of our perspectives. I don't think we imagined we would get there. 38 of those 40-some people signed on to that agreement. Representatives from all sides of the table agreed to that consensus agreement. And from that agreement came the directive to form the Joint Use Planning Committee to bring forth to you recommendations about how to implement that agreement. And that's what you have before you in the final report. I guess we used up all of our negative energy, in a sense, in the Sears Island Planning Initiative process, because the Joint Use Planning Committee actually proceeded with a very clear mission, and maybe that's why we work so effectively, towards the recommendations that you have before you. We divided the baby. As you can see from the maps in the plan, the outcome of our work was to determine a 600-acre area that could be in conservation in a 330-acre area that could be for future port development. That was one of the key difficult hurdles throughout our process, was determining, first, should that be done, and second, how. And when we did that, we then moved on to the drafting of the conservation easement to be held by Maine Coast Heritage Trust if you approve this process. That conservation easement allows for the potential development of a small portion of the island with a small set of buildings for environmental education, management and maintenance of the conservation land, and taking care of the resources on the property. About a year before the Sears Island Planning Initiative started, a group of parties interested in the island and the future of the island engaged various consultants to do a study of exactly what has now come to be proposed here. We were interested not only in how this might be planned as conservation land, but also what would be the economic impact to the community. Through our study, which was done by Charles Lawton of Planning Decisions and was peer-reviewed by, let's see who did the peer review, I guess Catherine O'Reilly, from who's the state economist with the Sears Island Planning, with the State Planning Office, peer-reviewed this study, and a professor, David Vail from Bowdoin, also peer-reviewed the study. So it was not something we came up with one night in our imaginations. The capital investment of the improvements on this conservation land through this analysis will amount to about $1.1 million. We expect this, after an analysis of use of state parks in western Penobscot Bay, we expect to see around 20 to 25,000 visitors annually to this conservation land. Camden Hills State Park, you may know, gets about 160 to 200,000 visitors a year as a nearby park. There are other smaller parks that receive smaller levels but are concomitant with the size of 20-some thousand visitors. The economic activity to be generated by those visitors will represent about $1.7 million in annual economic activity in the upper Penobscot Bay region. And through our study, I will say that we estimated that there would be up to six staff people involved in management of this conservation land. And some of them would be employed by what you see in your documents as the management entity, so-called. That would be the entity that manages the facilities and the environmental education program and maintains the conservation land. That's to put some numbers to what James was talking about a few moments ago about economic activity for the town of Sears Fort and the upper Penobscot Bay area. I think I'll conclude simply by saying that we've seen 40 years of stalemate on this island. When I came to Maine as an adult in the early 1970s, we'd already gone through one rather brutal public process trying to determine the future of that island and its use. We've seen many since then. This was an opportunity to come to an answer to that, to give some clear guidance towards the future about the future uses of Sears Island, which would both be beneficial to the immediate area and, we believe, to the state of Maine. So I'd like to take questions if you have any.
Thank you, Mr. Dickerson. Questions for Mr. Dickerson? I'll start with Representative Thomas and then Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dickerson, you talk about $1.1 million in the education center on the island and the visitor center.
Capital investment.
And when I read Section 12, I read that the grantor, which that the grantor is the state and the holder is the Maine Coast Heritage Trust, correct?
Correct.
Okay, it says that the responsibility of the grantor to bear all costs. Am I reading that right? That the state of Maine would end up building this educational center, this visitor center, and maintaining it and paying the liability?
No, you're not quite reading that correctly, and let me come back to this. This is a sort of a technicality of drafting of a conservation easement. All conservation easements place upon the continuing owner of a property the responsibility to bear the costs of the property, whether they're taxes or surveys or clearing safety hazards from trails or whatever they may be. However, this easement also, the grantor becomes larger than the original grantor of the easement, which in this case would be the state of Maine through the Department of Transportation. The grantor extends to those agents of the grantor, which in this document is referred to as the management entity. That management entity will ultimately be the group, the organization, the agency that builds and creates this set of buildings, these facilities on the property. I very much doubt that it will be the Maine Department of Transportation. I also very much doubt that it will be any agency of the state of Maine that actually constructs the building. They will do so under a management agreement with the state.
It's Section 12, and it says that the grantor...
Are you referring, Representative, to this document?
This is the document that I the first one that I received. I believe it's the same as this one.
I'm just trying to
and
find...
And I printed it. It's yep. A download the email, and I've underlined those places, and I've been through this back and forth.
So is it number?
This was 18 of 48, but that's, again, it's the email. I don't know that it helps.
Commissioner?
Right.
Thank you. So is the Section 12 to which you're referring?
Yes, the heading is cost, taxes, and liability.
I'm with you. Thank you.
And it's the second sentence, and I'll read that if you'd like. It says grantor, and then it's parentheses, or grantors, agents, tenants, licensees, as the case may be, and any land management entities, and not the holder, shall be responsible. Just a second. I lost my place here. Shall retain all responsibilities and shall bear all costs. And one of the listed items of costs are improvements. And so the way I read that is the grantor or the state of Maine, the taxpayers in the state of Maine, could end up with the responsibility of maintaining the buildings out there, building and maintaining them.
Excuse me just one second. That would be an interpretation, but Mr. Dickerson mentioned also or grantors, agents, tenants, and licensees. They also could be this. And so I understand your concern, and I certainly don't think that we can be saddled with, if I can use that term, the expenses of maintaining that facility as a state. But I also am I'm comforted to know that those obligations, financial responsibilities, may be borne by, and I say may, because I don't know of any group that has come forward at this particular point in time, but I do know of interest within numerous groups, and I have a certain amount of confidence that they will emerge and that something will be done. But I recognize your concern, and I think it should be for the record that you would be opposed to having the state as we know it, either have to build or to maintain those facilities.
Okay, maybe I'm asking the wrong purpose. Maybe Mr. Dickinson isn't the right person to ask, but I wanted to get that out in the open, and I want to make sure that the taxpayers of Maine aren't obligated by this agreement. And it looks like to me they might be obligated under an interpretation. And I have some more questions, if I could, then, and we'll go on to this later.
Yep, that's fine, and I think that I could agree that might is the operative word, and... is one that causes you concern. Do you care to add anything to that, Mr. Dickerson?
No, I think the language in the easement does fully cover it. I think if I had pointed out anything else, that to build such facilities would, I assume, take an act of the legislature, which would have control over the budget of doing so since they're state funds, and the legislature would have that opportunity to step in and determine that that wasn't an appropriate allocation of state dollars. But I will say that all of the intent in this easement is that there will be a third-party so-called land management entity, not the Department of Transportation, that takes on this whole function of management and maintenance and construction of this facility. You will note in your report also that there's an advisory council towards the end of the report about a group to advise on the management of this land that would review the management plans in a truly advisory capacity, but the Department of Transportation would retain full control over the actual decisions of that management.
Thank you, sir. Representative Thomas.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. How can I be sure that this educational facility doesn't become a resort, a private playground for the elite from all kinds of different nonprofit organizations. I see that there's going to be a dock in here. I can see the possibility of people coming here with their yachts and docking and then staying at this facility as a, and I don't, and I've looked through the agreement, and I'm not a lawyer, but there have been other conservation easements that end up being the private playground of various people. Let me put it that way. And I don't want to see public property used in that way, the way it has been in some other places. Is there a place in here where I can be assured that's not going to happen?
Well, I think there's several places in the document that should give you some reassurance. Keep in mind that the conservation easement is a guidance document about the uses. It has to say what can be allowed. It does not prescribe what will occur. And though it does allow a dock, that doesn't say there must be a dock. A dock may or may not be built. The easement simply allows that dock to be built. I might add that that dock and its design was a close consultation with the harbor master of the town of Searsport to determine what would be effective for the town's interests in navigation into this area in the future. In regard to an exclusivity or an elitism of this property, this property is owned by the state of Maine. It's under the jurisdiction of the Department of Transportation. The department will control whether or not this becomes in some way an elite facility. You do not give up that control. If you return in the conservation easement to Section 7 on public access. Grantor hereby permits and will refrain from prohibiting or discouraging use of the protected property by the general public from low-impact outdoor recreational uses, walking, hiking, and goes on further to talk about this public access. There is nothing in that that suggests that the holder or the grantor has any ability to set up any hurdles about the socioeconomic status of the visitors. So I think that this is pretty well protected by state ownership as to what it will become in terms of who gets to use this place.
Thank you. Additional question?
That's fine.
Representative Brown?
I had essentially the same, Maine Coast Heritage Trust, are they going to be financially stable? Are they going to be responsible? Who's going to be responsible for the maintenance? Who's going to be responsible for the road? Who's going to be responsible for the management? And I think that those are the concerns that Representative Thomas addressed.
Thank you. Are there any other questions of the committee for Mr. Dickerson? Senator Diamond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Mr. Dickerson. I would ask you the same question I asked Mr. Gilway, and that is, in your opinion and your involvement with this whole project, what do you think would take place if this was not voted to continue today, confirmed today?
Well, I'm not sure I'm prepared to say whether this particular composition of the Joint Transportation Committee or a future composition of the Joint Transportation Committee should make this decision. That's your purview. But from my perspective, we've had a terrific three-year process that I've described here. There is a commitment of a very wide range of interested parties to move ahead with this at this time, to partially clear the air that has hovered around this island for 40 years. Will you be able to recapture this by not making that decision today? Will that wither? Possibly. I can't really predict that, whether that will occur or not. But I would urge the committee to not continue the stalemate that has surrounded use of this island for 40 years. That stalemate has benefited no one in Maine. And my prediction, if this is not approved, is that it will revert to a long period of stalemate, interrupted occasionally by gigantic confrontations between development and preservation, To what end, I cannot be sure, but I do not think that we should pass on this opportunity, and I think you have a chance to make a historic decision for Maine about a process that is a model for how to reach decisions on these controversial issues around the country.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Mr. Dickerson, thank you for your time today. And the third presenter and voice in this will be from the transportation community, and Mr. Grinrod, come up, please.
Good morning. My name is Bob Grinrod. I have been a member of the various committees going back about 3 years. And in my real life, I function as the president of the Montreal, Maine, and Atlantic Railway, which, as I always point out, is the red line on the map sitting on the easel back there. I'm going to abbreviate my remarks because I'd rather get to questions than anything else. Generally, the port interests, I think, find this agreement acceptable. It provides for 330 acres for port development and the balance of the island, roughly 600 acres for conservation uses of various types. The key study that was done on behalf of the Maine DOT. It is generally known as the Cornell Report, and it has been out since about last fall, I believe, and it is an extensive study as it relates to Steers Port of the market for and the requirements of a port at that place. The port would cost approximately $2 million. It would generate approximately 200 jobs.
$2 million?
Oh, pardon me. Well, no one would believe that.
We'll take four of them, please.
Yeah. Based on tax rates and estimates, because they can only be estimates at this time, it would generate for the town of Searsport approximately, I think it's $1,650,000 in annual taxes on the fixed assets. That is, you know, the things built, you know, the wharves and the buildings and things of that nature. To the extent that there would be tax revenues that would accrue to either the state or to the town from the commercial activity that transpires within the port district, you know, we can only speculate at this point. I would say that this, as others have mentioned, has been going on for quite a number of years. My company was in the past the proud owner of Sears Island and was one of the people trying to develop it in the past. I would point to the very good summary report that has been written. I think it covers the points quite well. And what I would say is that from a port perspective, Sears Island and the Searsport port are uniquely sited and have unique advantages to be a good place for port expansion. There are relatively few places on the east coast of the United States where you have a combination of deep water, a protected area, and inland transportation that meets the qualifications and specifications of moving what would most likely be large volumes of containerized traffic rather than bulk materials. Bulk materials would continue to move through Mack Point, the existing port, and this would, the containers would most likely be on Sears Island. What I would say in general terms is that, you know, Maine needs the impetus in its economy. even if all this traffic is going somewhere else, if every single box that comes and goes off a ship ends up in Chicago, the benefit to the Maine economy is still strong because of the number of jobs created and the cash flow that will come off this. And one must realize that to some extent this is going to benefit Maine shippers because they will have access to a system which otherwise couldn't be there because of volumes. At the end of the day, whether anything gets built out on Sears Island, you know, there are two ways of looking at it. Can you get a permit? Well, that's one whole set of issues, and I hope that the efforts that have been put in by the JUPC and previous groups have helped to make that process somewhat easier. If you think there's going to be no opposition to the construction of a port, even if this is all approved, I think you're not looking at things realistically. But I think that we have put ourselves in a much better position. I think we have gone over most of the issues, and I'll just leave you with a quote, because I think one thing that is on your minds is, you know, do we give away two-thirds of the island and then have a firestorm of opposition when it comes to the development of the remaining third for port purposes? I can only say that I believe the people from the conservation side who participated in this process did so in good faith, but I also recognize that every conservation group was not represented. So I'll leave you the words from another politician, trust but verify.
Thank you, Mr. Grinrod, and I'll recognize members of the committee for questions to Mr. Grinrod. If you'll allow, I'd like to open up.
Sure.
You talked about the annual tax revenue estimated to be somewhere around $1.65 million that would go to the municipality of Searsport. From a transportation perspective, and then looking at it in terms of the economy of the rest of Maine, what benefit would be derived by Maine and its economy, that whole generalized piece, from having a port facility developed on Sears Island, other than the obvious tax benefit to Searsport?
And employment and so forth. I mean, I think we can all understand that. There are many shippers in Maine now. I can name names if you like. Sappy Paper at Hinckley is one, who ships a good deal of their freight in and out of the state through other ports. Another one is L.L. Bean. You know, L.L. Bean has substantial amounts of traffic to come and go from the West Coast and come to Maine. Obviously, those would be candidates for movement of traffic through Searsport rather than going somewhere else to do that. It would be more efficient and probably less costly for those Maine businesses who could take advantage of this opportunity to use Searsport rather than some of them use the Port of Montreal, some of them use the Port of New York, some of them use... Well, we had a barge system that operated for a while that took containers from Portland to New York, but that's kind of an inefficient system. Sorry, Mr. Henshaw. So do I think others would use it? Certainly. I think benefits would accrue to the state because we were handling so much traffic that's going elsewhere. And, you know, it makes something available to Maine shippers and receivers that cannot otherwise be available because this is a volume business. You can't have a ship come in to Searsport or Portland or anywhere else and unload five containers and pick up three containers and sail off to Europe. Things don't work that way. If you don't have volume, it doesn't happen.
Thank you. Representative Masaryk, and then over here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning.
Good morning.
My question is, you said containers would be the big, rather than bulk materials.
I believe
right.
that would believe probably
that. Right.
be
and
the case.
My question would be like the railroads. It seems to be a key ingredient to get in this whole process because of the ability to get to the West Coast and to mm-hmm. the interior. Is there any, do you think in the future, and again, I'm not sure, it would seem to me, though, the rail line would probably should extend onto the island.
Oh, exactly.
And do you foresee that happening?
That is part of the process. If you have access to the Cornell study, the Cornell study pegged the cost of building the port at about, if I'm doing this from memory, $220 million. Well, that included the port facilities. It also included substantial road improvements adjacent to Searsport and the extension of the rail line onto the port facility itself, which can easily be done, and that was part of the initial plan when the causeway between the mainland and Sears Island was constructed, whenever that was done.
Yeah, it just makes sense.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And over here, I'm going to let Representative Fisher go and then Representative Thomas.
Thank you. On a more, good morning. On a more immediate issue, what is the number of people you have employed with the MMA?
This week?
Yeah.
Give or take 240. If you ask me as of the 1st of June, the number would have been 310 or 15. The closure of the Katahdin paper mill, even if it is on a temporary basis, has not done good things for us.
If a port goes in, have you done any speculating on what it will do for the employment picture at the MMA?
Oh, it will certainly improve it, and it will, I would say, in and of itself. I mean, you know, you have to make certain assumptions that if someone is willing to invest the money to build the port, they have satisfied themselves that there will be sufficient traffic through the port to justify the investment. And you can speculate on, well, exactly how much traffic is that, but you can't really tell. It'll make all the difference in the world.
Jobs for the railroaders compared, pay-wise, compared to the average main worker. Average pay?
On average, I would say we probably pay, inclusive of benefits, and this is something fairly important, inclusive of benefits, $70,000 to $75,000 a year. We have done our best to maintain our benefit package, which is essentially free to the employees, and it's a full benefit, full medical, dental, life insurance, catastrophic insurance, and so forth. How long we can do that, I can't tell you, because the cost of that program in and of itself is going to rise 21% from 2008 till 2009.
One more question, and maybe I shouldn't ask the question. If the port does not go in, your parent company, not the best word, this. What is the future for the MMA if the port does not go in?
Well, we are doing everything we can to generate as much traffic as possible through the port of Searsport already. You know, we are working very hard, and we have representatives on the payroll in Europe, both in Western Europe and Eastern Europe, to develop traffic basically from Mack Point. And we are working on that, and we are also working on interesting port developers in Sears Island as a container port. And I will say that, I don't know, I'll turn around. Where are you? Can I mention this?
I can't read your mind. But go ahead. Yes,
Mr. Grinrod, yeah. Perhaps you could answer it this way. Are there any people on the globe interested in the development of Sears Island as a port facility?
Yes.
To your knowledge. Thank you. I think that will suffice.
One more, if I may. We are dealing now with the MMA, the second major rail line in the state of Maine is, of course, the Maine Central or the Guilford system. Will this have a positive impact on them also?
On Guilford?
Yeah.
I think so. It has the potential to do so.
Okay. Thank you.
Perhaps a little... somewhat more limited because we have the way you move containers is you put them in a freight car and you stack them up too high. And when you stack them up too high, they're in round numbers 21 feet tall. We have the ability to move traffic of that size from Searsport to our connections in Montreal today. No other work necessary. Guilford has, because Guilford is an older railroad and was built through the hearts of existing cities and towns, as you well know. You represent a lot of them. They have a lot of dimensional difficulties that would not allow them to handle double stacks, but they could handle the containers on a single level basis.
Thank you so much.